Chapter 8. After Derek and Irene were declared fully qualified for flying Dodo dropships, they flew up to the toaster with Perkins, leaving the three sergeants to wrap up things dirtside and catch a big whale transport up to the ship. They were met in the docking bay by a female Ruhar cadet who was not unfriendly, but gave the impression she had way too much to do for escorting aliens around the ship. The cadet led the way, with Shauna walking on the right beside her and Jesse and Dave behind. With the ship preparing to get underway and cadets racing around under the supervision of the few adult crew members, the journey forward was slowed by having to squeeze against the side of passageways to make way for cadets on more important missions. "Cadet Garner," Shauna asked after a steady stream of cadets had come around a corner, "where are the officers?" They had walked a quarter of the ship's length, and all she had seen were cadets. Not only cadets hurrying past, but also cadets working at consoles, performing maintenance, and even loading practice missiles into a Vulture fighter dropship. So far, the only adults she had seen were herself and the other two human sergeants.
"Please call me Jin. There are only 11 adults of my people aboard the Rue Tostella,"
Jin Garner explained patiently.
"On this training mission, third and fourth year cadets are supposed to perform all necessary activities, under supervision of the adult officers, of course," she added when she saw Shauna nervously gritting her teeth.
That's great,"
Dave filled in as Shauna and Jesse shared a quick look of terror. A starship, a mind-bogglingly sophisticated piece of alien technology, was being mostly flown and maintained by children? No, not a piece of technology. A starship was a collection of millions of pieces of advanced technology, with several hundred or more of those pieces vital to safe operation of the ship.
"Do not worry. I have been told there is only a small chance the ship could go boom."
Jin winked in a gesture she had been told the humans would understand.
"Oh, thank," Dave began to say. "Although I was told that by a third-year cadet, so he could be wrong,"
Jin added with a straight face. Her performance only spoiled when she looked to see the reaction of the humans. As they came near an intersection, the cadet pointed to the right, and Shauna hugged the wall to avoid bumping into anyone coming around the corner. Just as she reached the intersection and turned right, Shauna came face to face with a Kristang. Instincts took over, and Shauna shouted while slamming her right shoulder into the lizard's midsection. With the heel of her left hand, she punched the alien hard in the chest once, twice. Then the Kristang was falling down, and Shauna was being pulled backwards. Cadet Garner had both hands on Shauna's shoulders and was pulling her down, shouting something like, "No, friend!
Easy, easy, baby!"
Jesse held Shauna so she didn't crack her head on the floor, and Dave leaped up and around the falling woman to stand between her and the lizard. Jesse moved to spin Shauna so she would be behind him, but she resisted, and they tussled for a second.
"Halt! Stop!" the cadet ordered frantically. "She is a friend!"
Dave did not waver from a fighting stance as the Kristang pushed itself off the floor, stood up, and smoothed the front of its shirt.
"This is the first time I have met humans."
The lizard smiled in a horrible grimace and made a short bow. It rubbed its chest.
"You hit harder than I expected. Perhaps your species is not as weak as I was told."
Then, impulsively, it stuck out a hand toward Dave. Dave stood stiffly until the cadet, frantic head jerking, urged him to return the gesture of friendship. Warily, Dave came out of a crouch and took the lizard's hand, which was warm and dry. Dave did not want the lizard to feel a limp, dead fish grip, but he also didn't want the creature to interpret a hard squeeze as a threat. The lizard squeezed back with the same firm pressure, then released before it became awkward. Then the Kristang nodded to the Ruhar cadet and continued on along the hallway, turning around a corner out of sight. Jesse let out the breath he had been holding.
"Can someone please tell me just what the hell that was?"
"Velt Serkotra Tutula is not the Kristang you know."
Jin had stepped back from the three humans, disturbed by the incident.
"She is Verd Kris. Velt is her rank in their system. I do not know its equivalent in the UNEF military."
"She?" Jesse gasped. "That was a female? I thought they were all weak and small and realizing he was talking to two females who might not appreciate having their gender spoken of in those terms. Well, because, you know, the warrior caste genetically engineered them like that, which is a bad thing, a terrible thing. He decided the best thing to do right then was to stop talking. The name Verdkris means true Kristang, or original Kristang, or first Kristang. Something like that, Jin explained. They are from a population of Kristang cut off from their society when a wormhole shift blocked access to their home territory. My people then took control of the territory, but we did not wish to expend the effort to take that planet. All we did was remove their capability for faster-than-light spaceflight to protect ourselves. Over 800 years, Verdkris society drifted away from the distorted culture enforced by the warrior caste and back toward the matriarchal culture of the Kristang before the Therannan conquered their homeworld long ago. Some Verdkris now fight alongside my people, and they are extremely fierce warriors, especially their women. Goddamn. Jesse let his shoulder slump with a shudder, coming down off an adrenaline high. Why didn't someone tell us? Shauna asked as she rubbed her sore left hand, getting right in the cadet's face. The well-disciplined cadet did not flinch. We thought you knew. That information was not in the briefing packet about the ship? Info that friendly lizards were aboard the toaster? Shauna asked with angry sarcasm. No, we were not told that. God damn, Jesse repeated. Hell, I would have remembered that. You okay, hun? Shauna? Shauna shot Jesse a look that told him calling her honey in public was not acceptable. We know about the Verdkris a little. I heard a rumor some of them have been on Paradise, Gitanu, but I've never met one, or seen one. I do not know whether any Verdkris have been on Gitanu. Jin bit her lower lip. There is one other Verdkris aboard. You will meet him later today during the orientation briefing. He has met humans on our capital world when your liaison people were there after the Mazer Cannon incident. The other Verdkris is, she thought carefully, not entirely willing to trust the translator. Interesting. Interesting how? Shauna asked with a look to Jesse. You will see. He is a Sergon, a rank similar to a sergeant or warrant officer in your human military. His training methods can be somewhat rough and profane. Do not be alarmed. He is on our side. Are you sure about that? Jesse suppressed a shudder at the unexpected encounter with just one of the lizard-like aliens. He lowered his voice and looked both ways in the passageway they were walking along. You trust a Kristang? I mean, Verdkris? He added with a cringe. Do not be embarrassed. They are Kristang, by origin. Over the years, the two societies have drifted apart genetically because of isolation from each other, and because the Verdkris have pursued genetic modifications different from their hostile cousins. She paused, cocking her head. Did that translate properly? I used a term for family who are not directly related. Yeah, cousins is good, Jesse assured her. The most obvious difference, of course, can be seen in Verdkris females. Their genetics have been restored close to the original baseline, before the Maxalks, through the Therannan, forced changes on their society. Shauna flexed her sore wrist. What happened? What happened to the Kristang is what happened to every species under the Maxalks coalition, Jin shrugged. When the Therannan made contact with the Kristang, the lizards had spaceflight capability. They had established a colony on another planet in their star system, and they had an extensive operation to mine asteroids. Their scientists had not yet discovered the theoretical basis for the jump drive, so they did not have starflight. They still do not truly have the ability to travel between stars, she added with a smug wink. Nor do their ships have artificial gravity as our ships do, as you know. Yeah. Jesse bounced on his toes, assuring himself the artificial gravity aboard the Ruhar ship felt just like real gravity on a planet, except for an odd sensation of being tugged into two directions when he crossed the gap from one gravity plate to another, The effect was not noticeably the result of any technology. And we appreciate that. I hated the zero-G on the Kristang ships that brought us to paradise.
How did the Theranin make contact with the Kristang? Shauna asked.
The usual way, like the situation with your people. The Kristang homeworld was isolated for millions of years, then a wormhole shift provided easy access for the Theranin. That region of space was not of any strategic importance to the Theranin, but they were eager to match their Bosphorak rivals by acquiring a client species.
Did you know the Theranin used to be clients of the Bosphorak?
It's true, though the Theranin hate to admit it. When the Theranin arrived at the Kristang homeworld, they followed the Maxalt's process for conquering a species and turning them into clients. They studied Kristang society and selected the most fanatical, oppressive group to put in charge. For the Kristang, that was the warrior caste.
Wait, the warrior caste was not already in power?
No. Sergeant Jarrett, please call me Shauna.
She did not know if that was correct protocol, but the cadet had been friendly and seemed to want to use first names.
Yes, Shauna.
Jin flashed a smile.
Before the Theranin arrived, Kristang society was splintered between clans, and they certainly were not a peaceful species. But they had avoided suffering a wide-scale nuclear war and were evolving toward a stable coexistence between clans. Each clan had a warrior caste that was a small group, perhaps 3 to 4% of the overall population. The Kristang were a matriarchal society. Females led the clans. The warrior caste in some clans had long wished to assume power and strike the other clans, so when the Theranin arrived, they flipped their clients' society upside down and put the warrior caste in power. The stated excuse was that the warrior caste needed to take charge to prepare the Kristang for battle against my people or the Torgala.
You were planning an attack?
No.
Jin shook her head sadly.
We knew almost nothing about the Kristang and had no interest in them. Their home system is far from our territory, especially back then. Our experience with the Kristang, how we passively stood by and did nothing while the Theranin perverted their primitive society and turned them into a direct threat to us, is partly why we struck your homeworld. Your world is too far away for my people to maintain a presence there. Even now, after the Jarraptha have captured 12% of Theranin territory in their recent offensive, Earth is too far away for us. The purpose of our raid on your world was to deny the easy use of your industrial base to the Kristang.
Shauna forced herself not to say anything. She nodded for Jin to continue.
We knew that Earth is remote and not strategically important to the Kristang. Our hope was that if the Kristang saw they could not easily use your world as a staging base, they would lose interest in humans. That did partly happen. Their White Wind clan nearly drove themselves into bankruptcy through their effort to conquer Earth.
The cadet gave Shauna a sad smile.
Now they're stuck here.
Shauna looked straight ahead so the young Ruhar would not see the moisture in her eyes.
The Kristang at Earth, I mean. When the wormhole shut down, the Kristang at Earth became trapped.
Yes.
Shauna, I am sorry. Did that translate correctly?
Yeah, you're sorry.
Thank you.
Shauna reminded herself that everything Jin told her was the official propaganda of the Ruhar government. No, worse. It was that official story as told by a young, idealistic cadet who wanted to believe her people were always right and just and noble. Even though they had bombarded Earth's power generation and industrial infrastructure from orbit, killing thousands of humans in the assault or its aftermath. When they received official orders to report aboard the Ruta Stella, the data package included a layout of the ship and regulations for the crew. The Mavericks had been pleased to see the ship had 3 galleys, with 1 reserved for senior officers. Perkins learned to her dismay that she was expected to take her evening meal with the Ruhar officers and senior cadets instead of with her own team. Shauna scrolled down the data package while waiting for the all-clear to sound so they could move about the ship, and was surprised to see a section for aliens, in this case,
aliens, referred to any being who was not Ruhar, reminding Shauna exactly where she and her fellow humans ranked in the Ruhar military. As she read the regulations and suggestions for aliens, her frown grew deeper, and she squinted uncomfortably.
"Ma'am, this ship has a quarters section set aside just for us?"
"Yes," Perkins replied without looking up from her tablet. She had received a very skimpy briefing about the ship just after she accepted the assignment, so she knew some of the details ahead of time. The cruiser had a section of 3 cabins, 1 washroom, and a small common area that was reserved for her team. According to the layout, much of the ship's crew accommodation space could be reconfigured as needed, and it looked to her like partitions had been added to enclose an area just for the Mavericks. She did not know whether the separation of humans from the Ruhar crew was intended as a mild form of insult, but she was relieved to see it, as it reduced the potential for friction in the close quarters aboard the training ship. She was irritated that the Ruhar had not consulted her before setting up a separate space for humans. There were 3 small cabins, each with 2 stacked bunks and no space for squeezing in a 3rd bunk, even if she wanted that. Because the bunks doubled as acceleration couches where her people needed to be strapped in when the ship was simulating combat maneuvers, having a 3rd person sleeping on the floor was not an option. Originally, she had considered having the 3 men share 1 cabin, with Irene and Shauna bunking together, and giving her a cabin all to herself. Ship's regs did not allow more people than bunks, and since there was no way to add a 3rd bunk, she had to make other arrangements. Shauna could share with Jesse, while Irene and Derek could share another cabin. That left Dave Chaika as the odd man out, with Emily Perkins seeing no alternative to sharing a cabin with the young sergeant she found quite attractive, if she let herself admit feelings she could not officially have.
"There are 3 cabins. Jarrett, you'll be with Coulter. Strebich with Bonsu."
Ma'am."
Irene looked at her commanding officer as her cheeks grew red.
"Strebich, whether you've made it official or not with Bonsu, I don't see the point in trying to keep you two separated."
Everyone knew the 2 pilots were a couple, though they had attempted to be reasonably discreet about their relationship.
"Yes, Colonel."
Irene looked away, not believing her good fortune. She had not been looking forward to being separated from Derek during their scheduled months aboard the ship.
"What about, me, ma'am?"
Dave's own face was draining of color as he imagined being stuck bunking with a Ruhar or trying to sleep in a missile tube.
"Will I be hot bunking it with Coulter or something?"
The thought of crashing in Jesse's bunk while the man was away from the cabin did not appeal to Dave at all.
"No, you're with me, Chaika."
Ma'am?
Dave's question ended in almost a squeaky uptone. Perkins tilted her head in a confident gesture that covered up the butterflies in her stomach.
"The Ruhar do not separate genders in their bunk assignments, and our section doesn't have separate officers' quarters. Look, people, I know this is going to be awkward, but think of it this way. We will be up there to train and live with aliens on their ship. When in Rome, do as the Romans do, you got that? We need to get used to doing things the hamster way. That includes sleeping arrangements. We might as well be on our best behavior while in our little section of the ship, which will remind us to be on our toes 24/7 among the Ruhar. Understood?"
Yes, Colonel,
Dave stammered.
"Chaika,"
Perkins took pity on the extremely embarrassed sergeant.
"I'm not thrilled about this either, and we need to act like it's no big deal because to the hamsters it is not an issue. We have a common area in the middle of the 3 cabins, so I expect to use that cabin only when I'm getting rack time," she declared, as she thought to herself that maybe she should ask the ship's executive officer whether there was any sort of private workspace she could use during the daytime hours.
"We're all going to be cool about the living situation, we're going to be mature about it, and we're going to show the hamsters that humans are an evolved species. Does everyone understand?"
"Crystal clear."
Jesse spoke first, nodding a bit too vigorously from the tantalizing thought that he and Shauna would have a real door to provide privacy.
"Yes, ma'am," Dave agreed.
"I expect we are all going to be ass-dragging exhausted every night anyway," Perkins added. "The Ruhar have told me they do not intend to coddle us in training, so we need to keep up with a genetically superior species aboard a ship with equipment that is all new to us and second nature to them. We will be like your grandparents," she winked.
trying to use smartphones.
Oh, forget it, Dave groaned, and everyone laughed. That broke the tension.
Perkins reinforced the lighter mood by wagging a finger at Dave.
I'm warning you right now, Chaika. If you snore, I'm going to smother you with a pillow.
Don't you worry, ma'am.
Dave found himself actually grinning despite the still awkward circumstances.
You should worry about Shauna. Jesse here snores like a chainsaw.
Hey!
Jesse shook a fist at Dave.
Only when I get a cold or something.
Right, like you had a cold the whole time we shared that hut in the jungle?
Ah, I was allergic to that ugly couch, maybe.
At the first opportunity for privacy, Jesse pulled Dave aside.
Skeet. Hey, man, you gonna be okay?
Like I got a choice?
I'll be sleeping in my camo uni pants and a t-shirt, I guess, he said unhappily.
He thought that wearing thick, baggy pants and a shirt were the best way to make bunking together less awkward for Colonel Perkins. Maybe he could suggest they leave their cabin door open. Then he got a pensive look on his face.
The Colonel's right, though. Out here, we might as well throw some of the old rules out the window. I mean, not just aboard the ship. Us being military on paradise?
He touched the American flag patch on his uniform top.
It's kind of crazy, you know? What does it mean for us to be U.S. Army when we're cut off from the U.S. of A? Maybe forever?
I don't know, Jesse admitted. I've been thinking the same thing. Like, if we weren't doing something important up here, I might have turned in my stripes by now, you know?
Really?
That surprised Dave. Jesse had intended to make the military a career from the day he signed up. Bishop had been open about wanting to get out of the army and use the money for college, although at the time of Columbus Day, he still had no idea what he wanted to do with his life. And Dave? Dave wasn't sure whether he wanted to stay in or not. His time in Nigeria, where one random group after another shot at him or planted improvised bombs, and the politicians back home could not define what the mission was supposed to be, or even when or if the mission would end, had for a time soured Dave on the army. Then came Columbus Day, and it had no longer mattered what Dave's plans were.
Yeah, man.
Jesse's eyes darted over to where Shauna was unpacking her gear in the cabin they would share.
Big things are happening on Paradise, even for us humans. People are getting out and setting up farms, setting up businesses. Starting a new life, you know? We're up here showing the flag and making sure the hamsters don't forget all we did for them, but I'm getting worried that by the time we are old news and UNEF dissolves, other people will have grabbed all the good opportunities. We gotta think about the future, Ski, and I don't just mean tomorrow.
Has Shauna talked to you about the future?
Hell no, man, Jesse whispered harshly. I haven't said a word about it. I don't want to scare her away.
With human women vastly outnumbered by men on Paradise, traditional gender courtship had been flipped on its head, with women being reluctant to get rushed into a commitment and men eager to hold on to relationships. On Paradise, it was only foolish men who said those three little words, "I love you," first to avoid sounding clingy and scaring away a woman.
Shauna always wanted to be infantry, and now she's got it.
He shook his head.
She's not going to be tempted by the idea of us putting down roots on a farmstead in the middle of nowhere. Not while she's got shiny Ruhar toys to play with.
And good luck to you, Pone.
Dave held out a fist and Jesse bumped it.
Hey, don't worry, man. You'll find a girl soon. You're famous.
Fame don't mean much these days, Dave frowned.
And we're stuck on this bucket for months. I am sure as hell not finding a girl out here.
Emily Perkins lay down to sleep on the bottom bunk, wearing pants and a t-shirt. At first, she had kept her bra on, but 10 minutes of discomfort made her decide to quietly wriggle around under the sheet and extract the bra out through one arm of her shirt, a maneuver she knew always amazed men. Another adjustment was needed. With pants on, her feet were too hot, so she kicked her feet out from under the sheet. At last, she was physically comfortable enough to fall asleep. And she certainly was tired enough from the long and eventful day. But her mind was racing, despite her effort to concentrate only on breathing slowly. After a frustrating 10 minutes of thoughts bouncing around in her head like the ball in an old pinball machine, she felt herself drifting off. Thus, she was extremely annoyed when a squeaking noise from outside the cabin intruded on her attempt to sleep.
She tried flopping the pillow over her head to block out the sound, but it was no good. Finally, Perkins couldn't take it any longer. The cabin's control pad was high on the wall near the top bunk.
Chaika, you awake?
What? Dave pretended to be far more groggy than he was. His plan had been to lay awake, breathing deeply and evenly to pretend he was asleep, until he was sure Perkins had dropped off into dreamland. Only then could he hope that if he did snore, he didn't keep his commanding officer awake.
Can you hit the door controls? Close the damned thing? Is that squeaking sound keeping you awake, too? I can see if there's something caught in an air vent, he suggested.
Chaika,
she sighed, and it turned into a yawn.
That sound isn't coming from the ship.
Oh. Dave rose up on one elbow.
Oh.
He could feel his face growing beet red in the darkness. And of course, right as he fumbled for the door controls in the unfamiliar alien cabin, the squeaking sounds grew closer together and louder until even the sleepiest of minds could not mistake the source of the sound. Mercifully, he found the button and the door slid closed.
Sorry about that, ma'am. Why is it your fault?
Ma'am, in Nigeria we got into some tough spots. Jesse and I saved each other's lives more than once. Bishop, too. If I hadn't saved Cornpone back then.
He let his voice trail off in a soft chuckle.
I appreciate the thought, Chaika, but what makes you think that noise has to be from Coulter and Jared?
Sorry, ma'am.
He had not considered that Captains Strebitch and Bonsu might be celebrating their first night aboard the ship.
Stop saying you're sorry, Chaika. Let's catch some shut-eye. We have a busy day tomorrow.
Yes, ma'am.
He looked at the now closed cabin door, faintly illuminated by the light of the communications panel.
Should I go crash on the couch?
Thanks for the offer, but that's against regs.
The ship's not underway. Dave stated, unsure of himself. We're still attached to the resupply platform.
The Paradise system is still a threat grade 3 combat zone. Regs state anyone intending to be on a sleep cycle must be in a certified acceleration couch in case the ship needs to move quickly.
You're anxious to get out of here?
Why, do I snore?
No, ma'am. It's just...
He didn't bother to finish.
This is awkward for me too, Chaika. We'll be bunking together for months. Might as well get used to it now.
I suppose.
He almost added, and I'm sorry, but overrode his mouth before he could say anything.
Good night.
Good night, soldier.
No sooner had Dave let himself settle down into the bed when a different sound caught his ear. Not a sound exactly, more like a vibration coming through the wall. A rhythmic thumping, slowly getting louder and faster.
Oh, for Christ's sake, Perkins exploded in frustration, then laughed.
That's not Jesse.
Dave found himself laughing along with the colonel. If the thumping was coming through the wall, then it had to be from the adjacent cabin shared by Irene and Derek.
All I can say is those two had damned well better be rested in the morning,
Perkins complained with disgust. Then she couldn't help laughing, and she and Dave began laughing uncontrollably together. The thumping reached a crescendo, and after 5 or 6 hard banging sounds, stopped.
Thank God for that,
Perkins gasped when she was able to stop laughing enough to catch her breath.
If they go for round 2, I'm knocking on their door, Dave said half seriously.
Let's hope they don't, she agreed.
And it struck her then there was a major disadvantage to having the ship's crew quarters being reconfigurable. Instead of sturdy, fixed bulkheads, the movable partitions were thin and flimsy. Somehow, in the morning, she needed to discreetly let the two other women know just how sound transmitted through the cabin walls, unless they already knew. How could they not, she asked herself, as she answered her own question. Because each of the couples were busy and not listening to any sounds around them.
Again, good night, Chaika.
Dave felt certain there was no way he would get any sleep that night. He was in a cabin, less than 2 meters away from a woman in a bed. Perkins was a lieutenant colonel and his commanding officer, and like him, she was wearing long pants and a t-shirt. but he could not stop himself from imagining what she was like under those unflattering army-issue clothes. Blood was pounding in his ears from the excitement of having heard one and possibly two couples in amorous celebrations. He tried to think of anything else to keep his mind and other body parts from focusing on the woman sleeping, or not sleeping, almost close enough to touch, and found his thoughts wandering back to Earth, to his grandparents' summer cottage on a lake in the countryside west of Milwaukee. He found his mind drifting back to lazy summer days at the lake, swimming and canoeing, and fishing, and cookouts, and riding his bicycle over to visit friends. Blessedly, he began to lose focus, and as the exhausting day caught up with him, he soon fell asleep. Perkins had set an alarm on her Z-phone so she could get up earlier than Chaika and minimize the awkwardness of waking up close to each other. Chaika must have set an alarm even earlier than hers, because she was awakened by the sound of the cabin door sliding open. "You're up?"
"Yes, ma'am."
He put a hand over his mouth to stifle a shuddering yawn.
"Ma'am, hitting the shower. I'll be back soon."
She could barely see him in the light of the status panel. For a reason she could not explain, and couldn't attribute only to the fog of her just-awakened brain, she asked,
"How did you sleep?"
Immediately she cringed at the question that seemed much too intimate.
Good. I think my mattress is set too soft. I'll change it tonight."
Dave did not know why he was dragging out the conversation when all he wanted was to get out of the cramped cabin as fast as he could.
"Be back soon."
His words made him cringe, so he sped across the common area to the washroom and shut the door behind him, then slapped his forehead in dismay. He had not brought any clean clothes with him, so after a quick shower, he would be putting yesterday's clothes back on. Fortunately, uniform pants and shirts all looked the same, so he could change in the cabin later while Perkins took her turn in the washroom.
"Did I wake you last night?"
Perkins asked Irene and Shauna quietly.
"No, ma'am. Why?"
Irene asked innocently while lacing her boots in the common area.
"I got up in the middle of the night, tripped on my boots, and fell against the wall. These walls,"
she rapped her knuckles on a partition,
"are thin, and they transmit sound." No.
Irene stared intently at her boots, unable to look Perkins in the eye, and with the corner of one eye she saw Shauna was also suddenly focused on her own footwear.
"I didn't hear anything." "No harm done, then."
Perkins tried to inject levity into her tone.
"I'll tuck my boots under the bunk tonight,"
she announced, satisfied the two women had gotten her message. Breakfast for the humans had been a quick meal of granola bars made in Lemuria and a sort of herbal tea, with the herbs also grown in Lemuria.
"Better than most MREs I've choked down over the years," Dave mumbled quietly over a mouthful of granola that was so tough to chew that he had to wash it down with the tea.
The human diet on Paradise was still limited and too often bland, as UNEF had not brought plants to grow many commonly used spices. One thing they did have was peppers, and Jesse enjoyed a fiery chili sauce, but he got tired of it after a while. The Ruhar had been experimenting to see whether some of their spices could safely be ingested by humans. Even though Ruhar food did not provide any nutrition, their spices might serve to make the bland human diet more palatable.
"I hope you still feel that way when we've been eating this every freaking morning,"
Jesse whispered,